Carlisle to State College, Altoona to Lafayette Hill, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, a recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling reined in the power of the Federal Environmental Protection Agency to issue sweeping regulations with broad-based economic impact. How will that affect the regional greenhouse gas initiative? David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler and Stephen Bloom for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And the Supreme Court of the United States issued a number of landmark rulings in June. The common denominator, a return to constitutional law. I'll talk about it on this week's Town Hall Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania is poised to become the 22nd state to join an Emergency Medical Services, or EMS, compact that will make it easier for emergency workers to practice across state lines. According to the Center Square, the agreement standardizes privilege to practice rules, validates licenses in a national registry, and grants emergency workers the ability to work across state lines on a short-term basis. This removes barriers for out-of-state workers who wish to relocate to Penns Woods. The move is seen as necessary to help alleviate the current shortage of EMS practitioners. Additionally, a number of healthcare regulations which were relaxed or suspended during the pandemic have now been permanently changed. The legislation gives home healthcare workers who are not physicians the ability to order or oversee orders for home healthcare and allows supervisory visits by nurses to be virtual. The Center Square reports the pandemic resulted in an expansion of virtual healthcare services, and a making of the waivers permanent will provide continued access to quality health care. The CDC estimates some 265,000 Pennsylvanians currently receive home health care. The Commonwealth Court of Pennsylvania has put a halt to the Wolf administration's plans to toll a number of major bridges along the state's interstate highways. The court order voids the entire Major Bridge P3 initiative, which would have placed tolls on the bridges, with the revenues supposed to go for the rehabilitation or rebuilding of the structures. The scheme had been vigorously opposed by lawmakers, who argued PennDOT must have legislative approval before moving ahead with any such plan. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Pennsylvania is now officially in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI. This even as the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that the Federal Environmental Protection Agency cannot enact such sweeping regulations that impact an entire industry without specific legislative approval. Our Capitol Watch crew is here to discuss the impact of the ruling on REGI. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be back again, Dave. Thanks.
And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation.
It's an honor to be here, David.
Well, it's always good to be together, and there's a lot of big stuff that's been happening. The whole concept of limited government. You know, Ronald Reagan said, where the government is not limited, man is not free. And boy, truer words were never spoken. And so this is why, you know, we talk about a constitutional order. We have a permanent written constitution, and that we believe that jurists should be there to properly apply the law, not write new laws from the bench. And so, you know, these are all common themes of, you know, of our commentary. This is how we relate to the issues of the day. And the U.S. Supreme Court handed down an incredible decision in the case that was known as West Virginia versus EPA, and that this was regarding President Obama's 2015 so-called Clean Power Plan, which EPA set standards for carbon, and that the argument behind the case was that, look, Congress never actually empowered the agency to address this issue, so they're exercising authority, which they, in fact, did not have. And that the Supreme Court ruled that that was, in fact, correct, that it's not that EPA couldn't do that if Congress authorized them to, but in the absence of actual authorization by Congress to do it, they can't do it.
Yet this controversy, as you said, goes back not only to the Obama era, but really about 50 years to the rise of the administrative state, those federal and state agencies that are set up by the legislature, but then act as if they have independent authority and they're insulated from ever having to face the voters. And so you see organizations like the Environmental Protection Agency, which was created in the early 1970s, late 1960s.
Yeah, it was the Nixon administration.
And so EPA sort of took upon itself this idea that they could start to do things that Congress had never approved and no president had ever signed into law. They could simply decide that things needed to be done and do them just as a standalone administrative agency, which again, never has to face voters, doesn't have that sort of accountability that our system of checks and balance was built upon, that of course, every once in a while, every public official has to face the voters if they're going to be exercising power. And the other part of it was that the courts normally would, at least under our constitutional system, rein in somebody who was overreaching, and in this case, the EPA. But the courts for 50 years chose not to do so either. Now the U.S. Supreme Court has spoken anew and taken a whole different viewpoint on this, which is much more consistent with what I think most folks would understand to be the constitutional structure of our government, and says, Environmental Protection Agency, sure, you have a lot of power. You can do a lot of things because Congress has authorized you to do those things through the enactment of laws. But you cannot willy-nilly decide for yourself that you are going to go beyond those parameters. Huge impact, not only in the environmental protection realm, but really anywhere you see these administrative agencies running amok, whether it's at the federal level or in any state capital. We see it in Harrisburg as well, state agencies that are running amok. So this is a heartening decision with long-lasting consequences that it's going to be good for freedom and good for the economic viability of our country, that bureaucrats who never have to face the voters will not be wielding and abusing this sort of extreme power.
I know a common theme that we've had here on the show talking about executive overreach and the abuse of executive authority, especially over the past couple of years, this is a hard reset on that. And it's very exciting because, like Steve said, the court found that the executive agencies, which, like he said, have become an overarching administrative state, some people actually call them the fourth branch of government. That's how powerful they are. This completely resets them. So it's actually bringing to fruition the major questions doctrine, which hadn't been any clear case law on in the past. And mm-hmm. Now we have a clear case of what the power of these executive agencies is without the explicit legislative authority to implement laws, which is amazing. And it's just, like I said, a breath of fresh air, like completely resets the whole conversation about the balance of authority between the executive and the legislative branches, which I think is really exciting.
Well, and certainly this is foundational for liberty. This is foundational for our whole system of self-governance as a free people. And I would admonish the members of the legislative branch. The way that we got into this mess was that the lawmakers in many instances didn't want to do the hard work at the committee level to understand the issues well enough to write legislation in a sufficiently restrictive manner so that the regulatory agencies and the bureaucrats didn't have wiggle room. And so the ruling is good, but it's only going to be useful if lawmakers do their jobs and don't over-delegate authority to the executive agencies, we will not be able to make the progress that we should be making about rebalancing government power and accountability to the people.
But we now do at least have this strong, clear precedent. And I think lawmakers and or presidents who want to do things through the executive administrative process that really ought to be done through the legislative process.
The pen and phone?
Yes, the pen and the phone that President Obama was so famous for being willing to use. Those things are now, I think, they're going to be chastened. They're going to be more careful because they realize if someone takes them to court, which is likely to happen, they're going to lose.
Yes.
And so that's critical. The other piece of the whole West Virginia versus EPA case, we've talked about the broad implications. It's also got very important specific implications. As you mentioned, this case arose out of President Obama's plan to create essentially what would be called by any other name a cap and trade program for energy in the United States. It would have been a crippling program that would have cost consumers, driven up prices, restricted availability of American energy, all the things that President Obama was trying to do, he couldn't get accomplished legislatively. So he tried to use his pen and his phone, and he tried to urge the EPA under his watch to go ahead and do this anyway. Ultimately, when President Trump was elected, the pressure to do the cap and trade program finally abated, but the law was the case was still rolling. And so now with President Biden in office, again, the case itself was becoming more relevant. And so this is critical in this particularly sensitive arena of energy and the cost of energy and the availability of energy here in the United States.
A lot of the damage has already been done. That for the power plants that were in compliance with EPA when the Obama administration turned the screws with this so-called Clean Power Plan, that a lot of those plant owners couldn't afford to modernize or upgrade again, and so they just shut down, unemploying tens of thousands of people in communities all across America. And certainly the economic damage that's been done, the damage to the lives of people who lost their means of caring for themselves and their families, that damage is already done. I mean, I'm of course deeply pleased with the ruling as it was handed down and what that means for our ability going forward to rein in the power of the administrative state. But I mean, it's worthy of note that an awful lot of people lost an awful lot for no good reason because the Clean Power Plan was unlawful. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from PMA. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. So, we're talking here about the Clean Power Plan, being unconstitutional because the regulatory agency didn't have the authority to enact it. There are a lot of parallels with what's happening in Pennsylvania with Governor Wolf and his electricity tax with this so-called regional greenhouse gas initiative scheme that would impose a cap and trade system on electricity generators in Pennsylvania. And so although the governor has forced through this plan and even though the tax has been imposed as of July 1, that legal challenges are still outstanding, that there was a suit brought against the Commonwealth by the power generators themselves, that PMA, the PA Chamber, NFIB Pennsylvania, the Industrial Energy Consumers of Pennsylvania, and the Consumer Energy Alliance of Pennsylvania, that we all joined a lawsuit asking the Commonwealth Court again, to rule in favor of the plaintiffs, but also to hand down an injunction to say that because of the damage that will be caused by this electricity tax, which is just like, again, it's like Obama's thing all over again, that you have these plants and this is the bitterest irony, because the plants that are in question, which are in Indiana, Armstrong and Cambria counties, they are the ones that in the face of the so-called Clean Power Plan, that the owners invested hundreds of millions of dollars to upgrade them to be in compliance with the new stricter standards. The one upgrade was actually $1 billion, $1,000 million for one plant. And now Governor Wolf is going to destroy those plants and kill off those jobs and leave economic ruin in those communities because of his climate fanaticism. But again, the point is the governor does not have the authority to do this. He's claiming regulatory power, regulatory authority that the tax that the charge that's being imposed is just a fee. Well, in law, fee is a charge that pays for the administration of a program. Governor Wolf has been bragging about the hundreds of millions of dollars that he'll get to spend out of his Reggie slush fund for all kinds of pet projects. Well, the very fact that there's a slush fund proves that it's a tax and not a fee. And that's the basis of the argument that PMA is making in court. So, you know, we're not done. But, you know, at this moment, as we're recording, that the Commonwealth Court has not issued a decision either about an injunction or about the merits of the case.
And certainly the situation in Pennsylvania with Governor Wolf and Reggie is so parallel to the fact pattern in the West Virginia versus EPA case. And it's an example of the exact same thing. Governor Wolf wanted to impose this Reggie cap and trade tax, gas tax, or electricity tax program, but he couldn't get the votes in the legislature to do so. In fact, the legislature voted him down several times on it. They tried to pass laws that would prevent him from entering Reggie. He decided to veto those laws, and they weren't able to muster enough to override the veto.
Short by one vote.
Governor Wolf decided he's going to go ahead anyway. So it's a clear – it's a fact pattern that clearly fits the model of West Virginia versus EPA, and hopefully will be leading to the same sort of result here in our state courts, especially in light of the new U.S. Supreme Court case. The damage, as you said, is being done, and that's so classic of the administrative state that runs amok. The indifference for the working person, for the investor, for the person who builds a business, and the consequences of those administrative decisions, often made without really substantial due process rights for those who are hurt by them, and they don't care or they don't understand it.
Well, and I think if I remember correctly, that Pennsylvania is the only state out of the other, you know, 11 registered states that did not pass a law bringing them into Reggie.
You know, I think there may have been one that did not, but I think the more important parallel is that every other interstate compact to which Pennsylvania is a party, that each one of those was approved by the General Assembly. And so this is the only one that has not actively been, you know, validated by Pennsylvania's lawmakers, by the people's representatives.
Well, I have some good news. Maybe it's a good sign that there was a good Commonwealth Court opinion that came out 2 weeks ago on bridge tolling. And follow me for a minute,
yes,
because
please.
There actually is a really good parallel here.
Yeah.
It was the North Fayette case where some municipalities outside of Pittsburgh challenged the governor's plan to toll 9 interstate bridges under the challenge that the governor and PennDOT had not allowed people to comment or followed the public-private partnership law sufficiently in order to gather the information they needed to proceed with these bridge tolling projects. Well, Commonwealth Court issued an injunction in that case 2 weeks ago and said that the governor and PennDOT cannot move forward with it, and that was in part because it was an improper delegation of authority granted to PennDOT, and that PennDOT proceeded outside the bounds of what the law allowed them to do. So that's exactly, you know, what we're looking at here with Reggie. We'd like to see an injunction issued because the governor proceeded outside the bounds of his legislative authority. And we just recently had a decision in Commonwealth Court that was similar, and there was an injunction issued. So let's cross our fingers.
Yes, ma'am. And that's, you know, I know that's been a critical issue for, you know, for you and your membership, and certainly for everybody who, you know, like in manufacturing, we depend on all those truckers to, you know, to bring the raw materials or the component parts to the factory, to take the finished goods to, you know, to distribution centers or to points of points of purchase for consumers. And it's like if our trucking industry isn't competitive, if the trucking ventures can't, you know, survive these new costs, these new burdens, like, we're all in trouble.
Well, and to bring it back, I mean, that is a major policy issue. I mean, that was something that affected the economy of the state. These bridge tolling projects would have put a major industry at a disadvantage, just like Reggie puts the energy sector and ratepayers in Pennsylvania at a significant disadvantage. So just like the West Virginia case that we started talking about, that is a major policy issue that should be decided by the legislature.
And again, we're very hopeful that this will prove to be a sea change, you know, something that's really fundamental with the relationship between the citizen and the state, the ability of private parties to hold the government accountable for its actions, and again to try to begin to move back to the contours of our of our design, our intended design of constitutional self-government.
And you know, the thing that is most galling perhaps about all these cases we're talking about, not only have administrative agencies or executives overreached their constitutional authority, they've done things that hurt people.
Yeah.
They've exercised poor judgment. We're in this era of high gasoline prices and high energy prices, and all these proposals we're talking about would simply increase those costs for the Pennsylvania consumer. And that just is like a nasty, terrible icing on a bad cake.
Yeah. Yeah, right. It really is, because there are a lot of people who are, you know, living from paycheck to paycheck, people who are just trying to make ends meet, people who are trying to make it to the end of the month. And for people who are in that kind of situation, higher utility bills, higher prices to fill up your car, like, that hurts them disproportionately. And again, this is why we want a pro-production agenda on energy, so that we can meet demand, that we can increase supply, lower prices, and make all these things more affordable for people. So anyway, that's the news that we have for now. Unfortunately, we're down to the end of the time that we have. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and the work that you do?
They can visit our website at commonwealthfoundation.org.
Wonderful. Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you do?
Sure. They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at PMTA.org.
Wonderful. And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Benjamin Franklin, it is said, emerged from the U.S. Constitutional Convention and was questioned by a curious citizen as to what form of government the new nation would have. He replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." Well, Ben, America is, once again, a constitutional republic. The Supreme Court of the United States ended its term last month, issuing a series of landmark rulings that signaled a retreat from the judicial activism of recent decades and a return to constitutional fidelity. All of this jolted the American left, which had been accustomed to utilizing the high court as a vehicle to implement policy goals which they have been unable to achieve through the constitutionally prescribed legislative process. As is typical when the left doesn't get its way, street violence stoked by wild claims of impending Armageddon followed the rulings. This betrays a fundamental lack of understanding of the proper and constitutional role of the Supreme Court. The role of the court is, as the oath of office taken by the justices makes explicit, to, quote, support and defend the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution of the United States very clearly separates power among the three branches of the federal government, and did so for the express purpose of not allowing one branch to become dominant over the others. The legacy news media generally labels the current court majority that decided most of the significant decisions issued this past term as a conservative majority. That would be incorrect. The justices form a clear constitutional majority. Viewed through that lens, the recent decisions are totally logical and consistent. Unenlightened commentators were puzzled that two of the rulings, the cases overturning Roe v. Wade and that vacating a New York state gun control law, were seemingly contradictory in that one returned power to the states, the other curtailed state law. There was, however, a fundamental difference between the two cases. The New York gun control law unconstitutionally restricted the ability of an individual to obtain a concealed carry permit. The case involved an enumerated Second Amendment right. The High Court merely applied that constitutional right to a state law and issued a ruling protecting the right. In the Dobbs v. Jackson ruling, essentially overturning the errant and egregious Roe v. Wade decision, the court again followed the Constitution. Nowhere in the U.S. Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, or elsewhere, is there an enumerated right to have an abortion. The justices instead upheld the 10th Amendment, which states, quote, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people." Thus, the decisions were entirely consistent in protecting God-given constitutional rights while reserving unto the states power not expressly given to the federal government. Dobbs merely righted a wrong. There is not now, nor has there ever been, a constitutional right to have an abortion. Further, the ruling does not outlaw abortion. It rightly returns the issue to the states. This will trigger heated debate at the state level, but that is where the debate and resulting laws should occur. The court further inflamed left-wing passions by also reining in the power of the administrative state. Congress has for decades been punting significant but controversial decisions to the executive branch, allowing the deep state bureaucracy to issue regulations that carry the force of law. In a ruling with wide-ranging implications, the court clamped a limit on the Environmental Protection Agency, saying that any time an agency makes a broad-based and sweeping regulation, that regulation is invalid unless specifically authorized by Congress. In this case, the EPA sought to limit carbon emissions, which supposedly contribute to climate change, by regulating coal-fired power plants out of business. The court's ruling will impact other federal agencies in that any systemic regulatory approach is now unconstitutional. Any regulation that is fundamentally transitional to the economy must now be specifically approved by Congress. In making this ruling, the High Court once again restored constitutional balance by telling Congress to do its job and prohibiting the executive branch from exercising what are essentially legislative powers. The recent term of the Supreme Court of the United States was indeed historic in that it signaled a curtailment of judicial activism and a return of the court to its historic and constitutional role. With the Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 27 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WHKS-FM in Port Allegheny, WDMT-FM in Pittston, along with WIYQ-AM and FM in Saxonburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.